Manx Radio's Countryside is brought to you by NFU Mutual.
Hello and welcome to Countryside here on Manx Radio. I'm Simon Clark.
And I'm Kerry Kermode. This week we hear from horticultural farmer James Allenson from Rendu Farm in Derby on his return from Harper Adams University.
I speak to market garden grower and vegetable supplier Brian Radcliffe from the north of the Isle of Man to find out how the rain had affected the growing and planting and picking of the vegetables at this time of the year. And also we pay tribute to a farmer who has been involved in many, many activities over the years in the local farming industry, Ronnie Fairburn. Firstly, Kiri, on the programme, how's lambing?
It's going. Yeah. It's very difficult at the moment, actually, Simon, to be honest, to get them outside. If you're lambing indoors, you're desperately wanting to get them out as soon as they've had the lambs, get them on the grass. And there's plenty of grass about. It's nice and green around the countryside, but it's just so heavy going. It's so wet underneath. No doubt it'll dry quickly, but right now it's been a bit tricky for the indoor lambing.
Yeah, it's been a bit tricky everywhere. And we spoke about the fields getting soaked and how difficult, you know, the boats have been disrupted around the island as well. But for local suppliers and local growers of vegetables and everything else, cereals and everything, Brian Radcliffe is one who has his little shop on the quay in Ramsey every Saturday morning. Grows his own vegetables and supplies them there. Bit of soil on them, but that's what the customers love. I went along to Rye Hill and spoke to Brian about, well, how was the weather at this time of year? Well,
firstly, Bri, you've had to remove the snorkel by the look of the land around here.
Oh, it's just fantastic, isn't it? Fantastic. I've put the canoe away for today because you've come on a Friday and it's just glorious sunshine. It's just fabulous. Look at this blue sky and sun. We haven't had this for probably 6 weeks, I think. Right. Been diabolical.
What about trying to pick veg in this, Bri? Just give us an idea of what the trials and tribulations are, because people out there know the amount of rain that it's been over the last month or so.
Yeah, it's been tough going. We have a little local weather station to us here, and I think we've had about 13 inches of rain so far this year between January
really?
And February. Yeah. I think the Met Office said there's about 5 in January, but locally to us, 9 inches in January. 4 inches so far, and we're only halfway through the month. Yeah, brilliant.
Well, Rye Hill here, where we're at today, it's quite good land round about here, but obviously it's not designed, it's not sandy like other places of the north.
No, not at all. We're really struggling to get the veg out. A lot of things are kind of slowly rotting away, but we try and do our best. We've got cattle as well, and there's cattle and calves out in places, and you're trying to not put too much livestock in fields to not rip the fields up, really. But it's an impossible situation when every day is rain. I'm not moaning about the rain, because it could be like too dry, you never know next. I mean, we'd be saying, come on, rain, we need some rain, but we're never satisfied, are we?
But it's a little bit unprecedented, the amount we've had, particularly, I suppose, without a break, really, it's been the struggle. A lot of the time in the past, there's been bouts of this, and then dries up a bit. You can get the tractors in and out without doing too much damage, because obviously you're a mixed farm, right? And it's difficult. Once the mud is there and you've got to go in the fields through the gates to feed them, the grass doesn't really recover, does it?
No, not really. Once you get a rut, the water hangs around in the ruts, and then you make more ruts trying to avoid the ruts. And then before you know it, you've got a proper quagmire. Yeah, it's not great, but we're trying to battle on as best we can. And I'm only a one and a half band operation, but we get by picking carrots and leeks and sprouts and things like that. But it's hard to believe that we had a great run up to Christmas and it wasn't so bad, but it's just kind of opened up the heavens and making up for lost time now, I feel.
What about is it difficult? Does it make the choices that, you know, obviously you do a lot of farm planning for years ahead of where you're going to put stuff next year and everything. Does this sort of weather, will it change your plans for planting next year?
Most certainly. We're always taking into consideration for winter harvesting of vegetables. You always try and choose the fields where you'll be able to get on at the wettest time of the year, but it's not possible this year because everywhere is so wet. Yeah, you are planning so far ahead. You're examining, looking and pondering and seeing if they're going to stand a bit of movement on them. But sometimes you get it wrong.
But when you look at the farmers, people just think farmers go out, look at a bit of livestock, check the weather, go out and plant a few seeds and grow cereals. But we talk about the grass there, but you've got to manage soil management as well, potash, phosphates and all in the soil and the pH values. I mean, how will that affect that as well?
Yeah, there will be a lot of depletion through the rain, just washing the goodness out of the soil a bit. But we have cattle, and the cattle put an awful lot of goodness into the soil. And I don't know, really. Just try your best, don't you?
But you mentioned the livestock that you keep, because you've got the veg shop on the quay in Ramsey there, and everyone sort of knows you for that. But you do a lot of other things besides that on the farm here. And is it a worrying time with what's happening when you've got livestock?
Yeah, definitely. We have livestock to feed the soil, number one. So they're looking after the soil and pooing on the soil and keeping it all good to a nearly anorganic system, which is what I believe in, really. Proper rotation, you got all the no problems, hopefully, there and after. But yeah, there are things outside our control, like the blue tongue situation spread by the midges and the BSE situation going on, and difficulties in exporting stock and trying to realise their proper value. But the midge situation is definitely worrying for us all in the livestock sector. A lot of people are talking about vaccinating now, but I mean, you can vaccinate against a midgey A who might come along and bite your animals, but then you never know if midgey B might come along, and then you have to vaccinate against that as well. So you don't know what to do for the best, really, do you?
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, we talk about the margins, they're very fine, and weather like this with the veg side of it, you mentioned a lot of waste there before. Vaccines aren't cheap, and all cuts the sort of line down each time, Bri.
It does. It's just an added cost, really, isn't it? And we're all trying our best to be as profitable as we can and do things correctly. But there's a lot of things outside our control, unfortunately. There you go. That's life, isn't it?
Well, obviously, you've got a one-on-one on your Saturday morning market, if I can call it that, Brian. Yeah. What sort of feedback do you get from your customers? I mean, they must know that times are tough.
Definitely, you know, there is. Sometimes you have imperfections on your vegetables and you have to tell them and explain to them that things are not normally up to the usual standard because of the weather situation. And everybody's understanding, really, that we're all having a tough time. Blemishes on carrots or the leeks with a bit of a dodgy end on them. But the sprouts are lasting really good, actually. You know, don't forget, a sprout is not just for Christmas, but you can have them for Valentine's Day as well.
They're tough old conditions for picking the sprouts, though.
Absolutely no volunteers at all. So I've got a pair of wellies if you want to nip out the field with me now, Simon. Come on, let's go. Let's rock and roll.
Your recorder's out of battery.
Any excuse.
Well, bit of a soggy Bri Radcliffe there, but optimistic as ever. The actual sun was shining that day, but good sound effects for the geese and ducks there too.
What a real character. He is one of the rarest people we know, but what a passion. And like you say, having that soil on the vegetables up in that coal shed up in the top of Ramsey there, the queue out the road, it's just people wanting that quality, isn't it? And the blood, sweat and tears that he puts in at Rye Hill, especially in weather like this, we're very, very grateful.
Oh, yeah, because every farm is different, Kiri, as you know, isn't it?
Absolutely. Is.
Well, last week we heard the sad news of the passing of a well-known local farmer from the north of the Isle of Man, Ronnie Fairbairn. I spoke to his family because obviously we've got a few recordings that we've done with Ronnie over the years to see if we could broadcast some bits and pieces.
Well, Ronnie Fairbairn,
off them as a bit of a tribute to Ronnie, who was involved in farming all his life,
here, which you don't see
the rifle shooting
days.
Clubs, and just some great stories and memories that he had.
Modern technology.
The first piece
combine.
Is with Kerry talking to Ronnie at one of the local ploughing matches. But firstly, I was speaking to Ronnie at the Andrews Produce Show, the Root Show, as it used to be called, where they were making straw ropes called Sagan.
That's on. I was just
times were different in the farm, and there wasn't much money going, and you buy and kayar rope and stuff for to put on the sacks, was a normal job. So rooks too, rooks of hay. Used to always twist the hay too to stop the rook from blowing away and out in the fields.
So they would make these ropes by twisting the straw around quite a bit.
Yeah.
And a lot more cost effective, I'd imagine, than buying them.
Oh, well, yes. It wasn't everybody who could afford to buy them. Times were hard on the farms that time, like. I used to have everything had to be used twice. Yes.
And was there a particular straw that was better for it? Was oat straw?
There was nearly all oat straw, but if you could get wheat straw for thatching, it was better to thatch with was wheat straw than oat, because it was straight and longer, like.
Yeah.
But when the combines came in, they were crushing the straw all up, like. So this straw here today has been specially cut, I think, for this job, and it's looking to be good rope coming. Yes, they were a tough time, but every wet day you had to go and make these rope, because it wasn't fit to put corn in, like.
Right. So they used to throw thatch over the haystacks and cover them with that. Was that the only use they had, really?
Oh, it was only rushes or pulling straw, thatching with wheat straw. The mill that would be just put down in the thrashing mill, just the sheep, so it wasn't broke. It would come out the back, just the head took off it, the grain took out.
Mm. But when you look at it, Ron, you've been farming all your life, and you've seen this done from the cutting it with scythes, I'd imagine, and doing it with combines and thrashing.
I've seen some fields cut with the scythe, and then the horse reaper came in with a sheepboard on, and you had two men on there, three horses and two men sitting on, and one man working his foot, and he would pull straw or sheep corn onto it, and then when it got enough for a sheep, drop it off, and the women come and put a band on it.
Yeah. Was that a leap forward in them days? To that
must have been sometime, but when the binder came out, by gum, that was mighty then.
But when you look at it, Ron, you've been farming all your life, and you've seen this done from the cutting it with scythes, I'd imagine, and doing it with combines and thrashing.
I've seen some fields cut with the scythe, and then the horse reaper came in with a sheepboard on, and you had two men on there. Three horses and two men sitting on, and one man working his foot, and he would pull straw or sheep corn onto it, and then when it got enough for a sheep, drop it off, and the women come and put a band on it.
Yeah. Was that a leap forward in them days to that?
Must have been sometime, but when the binder came out, by gum, that was mighty then.
Was it?
Yeah. Except when it was a wet year, and the ground was wet, and all, it was only driven by one wheel. I come the horses were jibbing, and then getting cross over. You know.
But then the self-propelled combine come in, change things.
the self-propelled. But the first ones come out, I've seen three or four tractors cropping through the straw corn to pull it out.
Really?
Oh, I don't feel. The fields don't seem to be as wet these days as they used to be them time.
But yeah. It's great to see a tradition like this still being
lovely
to the public. Lots haven't seen it.
And especially see these young ones coming here today to do this. It's fantastic.
Yeah, because they've got like a bit and brace drill, really, isn't it? Is that what it is?
Well, it's the part of the drill, yeah. And they've made into a thing which was always... Sometimes you only had to twist it by hand. Somebody later on came on to this idea of putting a brace and pit onto the job.
A bit easier on the fingers?
Oh, a lot easier too.
There we are, some memories there from a great man, and be sadly missed by family, friends and everybody who knew Ronnie. Big in the farm, and went to loads and loads of different events, and the Rifle Shooting Club, who was a member for many years at Sulby. And yeah, just great to hear them, isn't it? And thank you to Ronnie's family for allowing us to put these tributes out today.
That accent, Simon. Mm-hmm. Oh, how wonderful, that real Manx tone. And he was always a great help at the ploughing matches. I knew he had Emma Farragher in attendance there. He was teaching her a thing or two. But always willing to pass on that knowledge. And those people will be missed around the countryside. And yeah, what a great man.
You're listening to Countryside here on Manx Radio with Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark. Well, years ago, farm knowledge was passed on from father to son, from granddad down the line, from brothers to other brothers. But a lot of it now is revolves around agricultural college to start with, to get more knowledge about the sciences of farming, Kiri.
Yes, indeed it does, Simon. Many people leave the Isle of Man to go to university or college in whatever industry they're in. I caught up with young farmer James Allenson, who went to Harper Adams University to study agriculture, and I asked him about the technology and innovation and how he was going to implement his ideas back at the Rendu Farm in Derby. Well, James Allenson, I think it's welcome back to the Isle of Man for you. Just recently graduated from university. Now, you've grown up on a family farm in the north of the island. It doesn't keep livestock, which has surprised me, but a very busy farm all the same.
Yeah, we're busy all year round. We've just come out of the Christmas period, which is a bit chaotic for us. People tend to go mad for the offers that happen over Christmas, and then we're just sort of getting ready to start planting the brassicas now. So that's your cabbage, your broccoli. Typically, Valentine's Day it goes in.
So no rest for you guys then?
No, there's never any rest. As soon as that's in, the potatoes will be going in the next couple of weeks, once it dries up a bit.
Yeah, talking about drying up, it has been absolutely awful. How has the land held up for you guys?
We're quite lucky. We're quite a sandy farm, free drainage, but just with the sheer amount of rain we've had, we can't do any land work. It's in the workshop getting everything ready just for when the season changes and getting the plants in the greenhouse ready to go.
In the greenhouse? It's hard to believe that you actually do physically grow them in a greenhouse still.
Yeah. All the plants, they start with us. We buy the seed in. The brassicas, they start life in the greenhouse. They're trayed up, they're grown to a couple of leaf stage, and then they're transplanted outside.
My word, this must be so intensive, the amount of work for you guys. It's a family business though, isn't it, James?
Yeah, all family business. We've got staff as well, 8 full-time staff, I think.
And you'll need them for this kind of setup, you know, planting small plants into large acres.
Yeah, it takes about 5 people to plant all of the brassicas. I think I worked it out. We do over, 3 million plants a year?
Oh, my word. That is unbelievable. It's hard to believe how manual it is still, given, you know, you think when you see them in the supermarket or on the shelves in the corner shop, all the veg, all beautiful there, that somebody somewhere has had to literally plant a seed and look after that to get it to that stage.
Yeah, I don't think people realise that there's the large amount of work that goes into it. It is all year round, and the way the weather's going, I'm half expecting a drought from April, and then we'll be on irrigation.
And that is it. I suppose you've got to make your business, you know, resilient to the ever-changing climate. It does seem to be very different from when we were younger.
Maybe for you.
I'm old. Go on, say it.
I wasn't going to say that.
But for you, what age are you now, James? You're fresh back from uni.
I'm 23.
So you'll have probably seen this changeable weather for the most part.
I never remember it being as wet as this. Or, I don't know, the summers seem to be a lot drier than when I was a kid. And we just seem to be chasing our tail all the time, either getting crops in once the rain stopped or doing irrigation. Irrigation in itself is a 24-hour job. Between me and my dad will start at maybe 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'll sometimes finish at 12, 1 in the morning.
And that's the trouble, isn't it? These plants still need care. It's hard to believe that you can't just stick something in the ground and hope it grows. They need an awful lot of care. There's so many pests and challenges for the plants.
Yeah, In some respects, they're a bit like livestock. They need checking every day. They need water. They need fed. And it is very important that you keep a close eye on them, because in a week, they'll soon develop a disease. And
do you find there is more diseases, you know, becoming apparent in the horticultural sector?
The diseases have always been there. It's just the severity of them. It's quite influenced by the weather. A good example is diamondback moth. A couple of years ago, or when I was about 10, probably never seen it, never heard of it. And then there was a jet stream come from Europe that brought them over. And it really hammered the crops, because they leave little caterpillars on them that eat the leaves.
Oh, God, that could decimate your whole entire crop, your income for the year.
Yeah, it can. So it's all about keeping a very close eye on it and knowing what's happening.
Yeah. And, James, obviously there's trials and tribulations with it, but from a young age, you grew up on your family's horticultural farm. What made you want to stay in it, even though you've seen how much hard work it has taken over the years, seeing your dad busy at it? What made you want to keep on and get back into it after leaving uni?
I just really enjoy it. You wake up in the morning, all your efforts... You can look out the window, the plant you planted a couple of weeks ago has grown, and you're just watching the cycle and seeing the hard work that you've put in is paying off. And it is, you know, really rewarding to see.
Yeah. It's something to be proud of. And what was your university experience like? You went to Harper Adams, which would be a popular agricultural university. How did you find it?
I loved it. I wouldn't look back. If I could do it again, I would.
This is not the social side I'm talking about now.
I was referring to the educational side as well.
Yeah.
I studied agriculture with crop management. That focuses more on plant production. It wasn't as much about brassicas or carrots or the specialist crops. It was a bit more of a general overview, but it gives you the tools and the knowledge to be able to look further into those specific crops and make your own decisions.
And did you bring any ideas back from university that could be implemented on your farm here on the island?
I've come back with a lot of ideas. It's just getting the time to do it. Just with it being a family business and not being a large corporation, there's limited man hours, and it is quite market dependent as well. It can be a struggle sometimes to sell the produce, because the yield fluctuates, and sometimes we end up with more or less. And it's just balancing that and trying to predict what the market's going to do.
And like you say, it is so unpredictable. You're right across the whole of the agricultural industry. I think you'll hear it said, the livestock production is the same. Did you have an opportunity to get out onto any of the working farms in the UK to experience how they handle that side of things?
Yeah, I did. I spent a year in Cambridge, near Peterborough, working on a potato and onion farm. That was incredible. It was, I think it's about 2,500 acres.
Oh, my word. That's a lot of plants.
That is a lot of plants. You would get in your tractor at 7 o'clock in the morning. You'd set it up, you'd put your feet up, and you'd step out of it at the end of the day.
That is crazy. And did you ever at any time think, this is boring, or this is too long hours, or this is antisocial? Did it ever occur to you that this is the industry you're going to be into for the next sort of 40, 60, 80 years of your life?
80 years is quite a push. I'd certainly be getting a card from the king or queen, whoever it is at that time. I've always known it's hard work, and I do enjoy it. I'm not one for sitting in an office all year round. It's just, you get out there, you see the fantastic island that we live on and be involved with it.
Yeah, and that is it. It's something that is a hellish rewarding, is the agricultural industry, even though it can come with its challenges. How do you see the future, James, for horticulture here on the island?
If I'm going to be honest, I see it quite grim. The producers in England, they're only getting bigger in comparison. We're probably a similar size. And as they get bigger, they're investing in technology and making it more efficient for them. And it's sort of pushing us a bit behind.
There we go. That was a very enthusiastic James Allenson from Rendu Farm in Derby.
It's a tough one, isn't it? You know, the dedication that somebody who really wants to be involved in, no matter which way it's going to go in the future. And worrying times, but, you know, if you've got the passion for it, I think, you know, he'll do all right.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. And such a young farmer, passionate about doing the horticultural side of the enterprise, but very wary that things may change in years to come and he may be doing something else, but he still wants to be in agriculture, which is always great to hear.
It really is. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on this week's programme. Don't forget, you can download the podcast for free at manxradio.com and listen to all the Countryside programmes at your leisure. And if you've got anything you want us to feature, just send an email to countryside@manxradio.com. That's it for this week. We're back next Tuesday with more. So until then, from me, Simon Clark.
And me, Kerry Kermode.
We'll see you next week. Ta-ra.
Bye-bye.